This week's show is brought to you by the following sponsor.
If you are setting up a new business or just want your existing business to grow, then SB Marketing can offer the help you need. Whether it is brand development, graphic design of adverts, flyers, posters, or publications, or to assist you online with a website, email marketing, or social media. SB Marketing work with clients from all over. Within Dorset, look no further than the Bear Beer family of micropubs, the White Bear and the Saxon Bear. So to find out more and see the portfolio of work and services, head to www.sbmarketing.co.nz. SB Marketing, help for your business. Ideas, design, online. Welcome to episode 30 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast with me, Sean Barker.
And me, Sam Davis.
And as the big day draws in, we just want to say a massive thank you for all your support for our podcast, for what has been a very eventful 2016, both on and off the pitch. It seems as though we've been doing this show for ages, but can you believe it? We only started in February. And here we are at Christmas on the big 3-0. So from me and Sam, we just wanted to take this opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. And thank you so much, whether it's been a retweet, a T-shirt sale, a donation, or even just a message to say that you've listened. It's really great to have you on board. But Sean, I'm sorry to bring the warm Christmassy feeling to an end, as sadly, we're going to have to get on with the show and discuss that game. So without further ado, here's what's coming up on this week's Back of the Net.
We discuss El Clasicoast as Southampton ran out 3-1 winners at the Vitality Stadium. That's right, Bournemouth kept up the consistent inconsistency by losing to our nearest and dearest rivals from down the road. And the big question seems to be, is Eddie Howe too loyal to his players?
Looking forward to that discussion. But thankfully sandwiched in between now and then will be a rather less pessimistic Michael Dunn, who brings us this week's view of the game in his match report, and then we bring you some reaction from the game, including a couple of interesting media sound bites that are suggesting that the lack of rotation is what's costing us.
Yep, and then I will hop into the Back of the Net news booth to bring you this week's developments at the Vitality Stadium, the home for now of the Cherries.
And Sean, what is this about a game that we're giving away, eh?
That's right, Sam. So sometimes on this show, we trailer and say things are coming up and then they don't happen. How's that predictor score going, Sam? However, folks, on this side of the hemisphere down south, I stick to my promises. So this week, we will be giving away a copy of Football Manager 17, thanks to Sports Interactive.
Looking forward to that. And then to end, we'll have a chat about our Boxing Day bout with the boys in blue as Bournemouth, that's hard to say, travel to Chelsea in a match that the bookies have down as a home banker.
Great alliteration there, Sammy. But first, let's start with a look back to Sunday. So here's Michael Dunn.
Michael's match report. Many of us drop a small gift around to our neighbours at this time of year, but our beloved Cherries took this kindness a step too far when they presented Southampton with all 3 points after an insipid showing in the pantomime derby by our heroes in red and black led to a 3-1 defeat on Sunday afternoon. Aside from swapping Benny Kofobe for Callum Wilson as the lone striker, Eddie named the same team that started the win in midweek over champions Leicester City. The manager made a point of voicing his desire to see his team claim back-to-back victories in the days leading up to the meeting with our South Coast rivals, sensing an opportunity to do just that against Claude Puel's stuttering outfit. All appeared to be going to plan early on as Bournemouth took the lead after 6 minutes. From a corner, Jack Wilshere received the ball wide on the right and whipped in a looping cross to the crowded penalty area. Nathan Aki, who is clearly in a contest with Steve Cook for who will bag the most goals from centre-half, stole between two opposition defenders and stooped to head low past Fraser Forster's near post. Festive cheer was in evidence on all four sides of the ground, and Bournemouth might have doubled their lead just minutes later when Josh King shrugged off Maya Yoshida to fashion himself a clear-cut opportunity which he failed to profit from when shooting straight at Forster. The Cherries continued to press forward without further reward, but no sooner had the home fans stopped claiming the entire South Coast for themselves than Southampton took a grip on proceedings which, unfortunately, they were not to relinquish until full-time. On 14 minutes, Ryan Bertrand drew the team from St Mary's level when he cut inside Adam Smith and breezed past Simon Francis before firing across Artur Boris into the net. Bertrand, who had made 5 appearances for Bournemouth as a teenager, then assumed the vacant role of villain by cupping his ear to the main stand and later, when he stumbled across the advertising hoarding into the Steve Fletcher stand, making hand gestures mocking the small size of Dean Court. The equaliser seemed to spur Southampton on whilst having the opposite effect on Eddie Howe's team. Bertrand was a constant menace on the right-hand side, with Eddie Howe at one point staging an impromptu meeting about the issue with Francis and Smith during the first half. This had minimal impact, however, as the England international continued to find time and space, his pinpoint delivery to Nathan Redmond looking certain to put the away side in front until the former Norwich midfielder completely missed the ball. Bournemouth looked leggy and short on ideas as Southampton hunted in packs to snuff out any danger and claim every loose ball. Any hope that things might improve after we hung on to going level at half-time were extinguished when Southampton went ahead after 48 minutes. Stephen Davis had replaced Harrison Reed at half-time, and the Irishman exchanged passes with Buffall before lifting the ball past Steve Cook to give Jay Rodriguez the chance to steal in ahead of Francis and apply the finishing touch. Eddie tried to bring his charges to life by replacing Mark Pugh and Callum Wilson with Ryan Fraser and Benny Kofobe, but Bournemouth remained second best. Rodriguez, Redmond and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg all had chances to extend the away side's lead as Bournemouth saw a succession of free kicks in the opposition's half come to nothing. Between denying the nature of the fixture, many Southampton fans conceded that they were not optimistic going into the match, but anyone watching the second half would have been at a loss to understand why they were so concerned. Bournemouth were denied any time on the ball and outrun all over the pitch in a manner not seen all season. It came as no surprise on 85 minutes when Southampton put the points out of sight. Redmond forced his way past Cook on the edge of the area, but lost control of the ball, only for it to bounce off his face into the path of Rodriguez. There didn't appear to be anything on for Eddie Howe's former Burnley striker, but he pivoted on his left foot and volleyed past a helpless Boric with his right from 20 yards. This was the cue for a mass exodus from Dean Court, as many of the home fans chose not to hang around to witness the celebrations by our nearest but not quite dearest. Save for a long-range Steve Cook effort which Forster almost spilled to costly effect, Bournemouth continued to have little to offer. When Mark Clattenburg blew up for full-time, there was a sense of relief amongst the disappointment that the scoreline had not been worse. The season may not be quite so festive as a consequence of this result, but just the same, I'd like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas.
And a very Merry Christmas to you, Michael. You can catch him on Twitter at All Departments. And it was a shame that we had to take a loss into Christmas, but alas, it's all going to be different on Stamford Bridge on Boxing Day, isn't it, when we play Chelsea. What is it now? They've won 11 in a row. Oh, it's depressing. What's also depressing is, like in the stadium, our fans just don't say anything when we're losing or when we've lost. Hence, we've only got one opinion in, and that's from Matt from AFCB TV, and he's been sandwiched in between two Saints fans, because it's always good to hear the views from the other side. In fact, the views are from the Ugly Inside YouTube channel, and we've got some thoughts from the media. Now, in terms of a song, well, it's pretty apt, this one, with Steve Wright and Chris Root both agreeing, "We Had a Bad Day."
You kick up the leaves in the mess. Beautiful game. First time I've ever been to Dean Court. Let's call it what it is. And the Bournemouth fans, very loud to start with, weren't they? Mm. When they scored very early on. But then after that, it was like a library.
Claude Puel put out six changes. You'd think maybe this could be a walk in the park. But Southampton just brought something better and more next level to us. And we were just slow, turned off. It was just not fun to watch. Jay Rodriguez was just all over our defence. Our defence looked slow. Francis hasn't been looking like he's clicking in to the match pace recently. And I feel like that's the main factor. Because you had a bad day, you take one down,
you sing a sad song just to turn it around. You say you don't. First half was all right. It wasn't amazing. We went 1-0 down. We reacted to it, which we haven't done this season. Second half, we were unreal. Stephen Davis made a difference. Came on straight away, put one on the plate for Rodriguez. Finally, one from 1 yard, he scored.
I've got to give Puel all the credit. He made the changes today. People have questioned that before the game, if it was the right decision to do so. But ultimately, what I said was judge him over the 90 minutes. You'll see if he got it right or wrong. He certainly got it right, as he did at half-time, because the midfield was ineffective, wasn't really doing a great deal going forward. We read in there, and Plassey and Højbjerg. So he brought on Stephen Davis, and it changed in their fortune. All of a sudden, they had a lot more control about their game. They looked a lot more of a threat, created the better opportunities. Look at the two goalkeepers. Who had the most to do in that second half? Undoubtedly it was Artur Boric, the Bournemouth keeper. And all credit to Southampton. They looked a better team today, I've got to be honest about it, over the course of the 90 minutes. And you mentioned Bournemouth, they just looked jaded to me. They looked leggy, they looked like a team that put a lot of energy into the last few matches. And it showed today, maybe, in hindsight, Eddie Howe should have made a few changes to his starting 11, a little bit more than he did.
Premier League's that demanding. It is difficult.
Mentally more than physically, or both?
I think both. But our manager made changes because he wanted to freshen up. And other managers have done the same. Obviously, they only made one change, and it's probably maybe cost them the game. But let's say he'll look at it, and he probably won't do it again.
So the last two thoughts you heard there were from Charlie Adam on Match of the Day and also Ray Houghton saying that Eddie Howe maybe should have rotated because the players looked tired. We'll see what Sean's got to say about that in a minute. But yeah, our continued progress under Eddie, it can't be underestimated, but we do seem to have an inability to string positive results together, and it's preventing us from sort of breaking into the Premier League top 10 permanently. But Sean, having watched that game, Bournemouth losing 3-1, what was your overriding feeling at the end of it?
That we'd just been totally bossed, hadn't we? Other than the start of the game. And I can't help but think, if that goal hadn't slipped past Boric, and let's be honest, he should have had it. That totally changed the game. We were bright, we were buzzing, we were on top, the crowd were with us. And it was like, Southampton are on the ropes here, and we're going to get a goal, another one, and then we're going to go a couple ahead. And then suddenly, literally, wasn't it, the goal went in, and it just totally, totally changed the rest of the game.
Yeah, that's right. We had that chance where Josh King cut in on his left foot, and where sort of Fraser Forster just stopped the ball dead. And it was from that moment onwards where the game turned, I thought. And then it's really strange, because when I watch these games sometimes, I almost get like premonitions. And when Cherry's players are out of place, it usually results in something happening. Like once, I can't remember which game it was, but Frano was not prepared for the opposition throw-in, and then he got out of place, and then they went and scored. I can't remember what game. But when I was watching Southampton on the attack, I thought, this is a moment right here that I'm watching now. And then Bertrand turned Smith inside out, who committed a bit too early, should we say, and then fired in that narrow shot. But Adam Smith there, not great.
And Bertrand giving it the big cupping of his ears and all that to the family stand as he runs past. You know, there's little Billy in the first row and there's Bertrand, yeah, give it to you. It's like, oh, you don't really need to do that. But the interesting thing was, before the game, the coverage I was watching on BN Sports, it had Alan Shearer in the studio and Sol Campbell. Man, Sol Campbell's awful as a TV guy. Okay. Shearer's great, but Sol Campbell, terrible. But anyway, but they were talking about, you know, six changes that Southampton had made and we hadn't made. We'd made one. And they were framing that in a, that's to our advantage, because Southampton are coming into this game with all these new players. And, you know, and then you get the pundits at the end of the game saying, well, you know, these are the ones that made the changes. Bournemouth did look tired. And we did. We did look leggy. We did look tired. But the only question I've got about that is with the club, especially Premier League clubs, right? Our backroom staff now, we have all these sports scientists, and every training session, the players are analysed and they've all got the digital things in their back and all that. Like, if it seemed apparent there were players that, you know, three games is too much in a week and all that stuff, but wouldn't they have seen the levels dropping in training? It's not like a visual thing. Oh, he looks all right. Like, they've actually got stats. That's what I don't understand. Is if were the stats saying that these guys were as maintaining the level that they normally do, or did it show they were dropping? Sam, tell me the answer to that question.
yeah, because I can do that. I don't know. It's an interesting point. I mean, Eddie Howe in the post-match interview, someone posed the question about, you know, are you going to have a rethink now, three games in 8 days? And he said, well, I might have to. And he said this before, but he never actually did change anything. But I don't know. It is a lot for a player. I mean, Jack Wilshere, to his credit, has done sort of incredibly well recently. And he, whilst he, I don't think he had his best game, it did seem that he was getting very frustrated with the players around him, and he was making loads of arm gestures all over the place. It seemed also that the Bournemouth players were just almost passing the ball and just thinking, so, you know, you do it. And I noticed that when Ryan Fraser came on as well, there was a lack of responsibility all over the pitch, and the players just looked just really jaded and, as you said, just incredibly leggy.
Yeah, and that's what I don't, it's hard to put your finger on it, isn't it? But it's like, we know, we pay so much for the staff to whatnot. It's like, were there any warning signs? Or was it a case of, oh, yeah, we might be a bit tired, but we reckon they'll be up for it because it's Southampton or whatever else. But, I mean, yeah, the lineup, I mean, we talked about it last week, and I felt that we needed to be able to kind of have periods of the game where we boss the game and we boss the ball. And I think as well, to be fair, in terms of our tiredness, other than the opening, we never really had a spell where we looked comfortable and we had the ball for long periods. And when you have the ball for long periods, that can be your recovery time because you're letting them chase you around. Whereas we never really had that, especially in that second half. It's just Southampton had total control of it. And so maybe that's part of it as well, was if we'd have kept the ball better, maybe we'd have been able to recover. And but it just, it was pretty painful to watch, really, because there wasn't really any bright sparks. I mean, other than everyone, you know, obviously saying Nathan Aki again, still looking good. I still have that nagging thought, though, that we are conceding a lot of goals. Now, you know, and you can actually look at when he went into centre-back. And I don't, you know, I know we talked about this last week, and it's like, well, you can't pin it on the one guy. And actually, his levels have increased and maybe others have dropped or whatever. But I don't know. There was a moment just after we'd scored. So he'd just scored the goal and everything was great. I don't know if you remember. And Southampton played quite a long roaming ball to, I presume it was Rodriguez up front. I can't remember. And Aki got caught again. It was like the goal we conceded against Liverpool, and there was a couple of others. And I think it overran, and it overran to Boric. But it was just another moment of, oh, we're right here. But, I mean, overall, he seemed to have the obvious drive and push and fitness that maybe the others lost, you know, do you think?
Yeah. Does it scare you somewhat that the two players that have been performing incredibly well won't be with us next season? I mean, we're going to need to strengthen in January, surely.
You'd think so. I mean, even with Wilshere, when he first came in and we're doing well, there was talk about if he loves it so much here and we're doing well, then maybe he'll want to stay. And I guess the test will be is how many games do we have like the game against Southampton where, like you said, he is going to get frustrated. Yeah. He's going to do a lot of the work. He's going to have to run around probably more than he has to. And he might just think, do you know what? Milan this type of year would be good. You know what I mean? We just don't know. But I don't know. I think the other thing is there's been lots of talk within the fans about how Bournemouth supporters have reacted to this defeat. And there's some that are one extreme of we're awful, we need to get rid of them, Wilson's rubbish, we need to buy loads more players. And then there's the others that are in the, you know, look, remember where we were, everything's rosy, we're going to lose games. It's, I don't know, for me, it's the Premier League, I think, is it's the most brutal league, isn't it? And it's the one where if you're not up to the top level, and the reality is we're not going to be at the top level every week because we're not there yet. And when you have an off day, I think what this league does is it magnifies the difference between the sides higher than any other division. So it means you can look like you're world beaters and you're beating the Premier League champions on a Tuesday, and then on a Sunday you're supposedly looking like you're totally nowhere near the races, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know it's an old adage, but there is no easy game. And we've learned that already when we played Burnley after beating Liverpool. We were in high spirits thinking we can, you know, go up there and get a result. It's quite interesting what a few people are saying on Twitter. Gary Wright comedically said, don't let them buy a dog for Christmas because they can't keep hold of the bloody lead. Steve Richards said, did AFCB have their Christmas party last night? Dave Andrews echoed what I said earlier, that the best two players aren't ours. No movement today. Jack was on his own for most of the time.
Yeah, the other thing I found odd was when we brought on with Francis and we brought on Ibe, was how narrow they were playing. Like, they never really gave us any width, did they, or options. They kind of both ended up drifting in and we just didn't have the opportunities to exploit them, and it just looked a little bit clueless. Now, I think we have, you know, we probably end up having to give credit to Southampton tactically and whatnot for getting it right. But even that was like, okay, come on and give us something different, change it around a bit, you know. And Afobe came on, and lots of talk has been about Wilson and Wilson's performance levels. The main thing for me at the moment is still, I don't think Wilson is giving us, he's not giving us the out ball like he used to. It seems like he struggles to hold it up a lot. He's not winning the challenges when it's 50-50 in the air with the defender when we're clearing it. He's not winning it. Their defenders are nipping in front of him, and that means we don't get a break. So when we do have to pump it long, so to speak, I think it's sticking a lot more with Afobe than it is with Wilson at the moment. Yeah.
I tried to poke you earlier with Adam Smith, but you didn't really retaliate. But there are a few people on Twitter. Paul Kenwood, namely, said Smudge is not good enough at right midfield. There was a conversation tagging us in an AFCB podcast between him and Mr. Tiggs, Tony, on Twitter. Smith came in for a lot of criticism and people were very surprised that he stayed on the pitch as long as he did. What was your view watching Adam Smith?
Yep, same actually. I thought when you need to get back into the game and you need a little bit more creativity and our movement and our passing isn't quite coming off as well as it can do, I think Smith is brilliant at the link-ups, and when we get the triangles and we get the third man running, he can get into space or he can release a man into space. It just wasn't happening in this game, and it literally needed somebody to win a one-on-one battle. And I don't mean that physically, I mean that skillfully, you know, and just get past that player or give us something. And which is why it was like, well, maybe this is a moment for Ibe. But then Ibe came on and just never really got given the opportunity of a one-on-one with a fullback. When he got it, there was extra players in. So in that respect, I was surprised Smith stayed on for that reason, because he's not that kind of player.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not as bad as people say. I mean, Martin Young on Twitter, crazy how many people moan about players' effort. 10th in the league, been superb for seasons, hardly a crisis. Yeah, I do agree to some extent with the, you know, if you put things into perspective. But we got some puns coming up. But my overriding feelings, you know, very disconsolate. Let's face it, the rivalry is entirely our own. There are a few Southampton fans that bite our tweets. It's all good fun and games, but they do tell us loudly and proudly that they don't care, because everyone does that. But with that match, that there's not even a crumb of comfort I was able to take out of that game. Usually there's something. There's the bad refereeing decision. There's the endless opportunities twinned with the sort of lack of clinicality. Is that a word? On this showing, there was nothing. And that did worry me.
If you're going to pick a fight, make sure you can win it. And if we're going to build it up as a derby, you got to make sure we win it.
Yeah, agreed. So we had a few puns come in. Steve Wright was on it. Hot Rod brings festive cheer for the Saints as the Cherries are left red-faced. Hot Rod Rodriguez, I like it. And also a very simple Saints and Sinners. Yeah, 6 out of 10 on that one. Paul Kenwood, Mockingjay shows more hunger in the game than the lackluster Cherries. Ooh. That's not bad, is it?
Nice.
I'm going to applaud that, Mr. Paul Kenwood. Very, very good. But, oh, I can see Sean on his camera. He's putting on his little elf outfit. You're doing some festive news, are you, this week, Sean?
Ho, ho, ho.
AFC B Club News.
Time to say goodbye
to Dean Court. AFCB released a statement a couple of weeks ago from the club's chief executive, Neil Blake, whereby he announced that AFC Bournemouth will now be looking for a new home with a view to be ready for the 2020-21 season. Within the statement, Blake explains that the club will not be held to ransom by the stadium's owners, Structure Dean, and that the council have made it clear that they are not happy to see a sizeable expansion to the existing ground. Eddie Howe says that it will be emotional to leave, but it needs to be done to help the club maintain its standing in the Premier League. Now, rumours of where the new ground may be located have already begun. Moussay reportedly unhappy at not playing. Lys Moussay, the French striker signed from Le Havre prior to this season, has been quoted in a French newspaper interview as saying he is unhappy with being in the stands and not on the pitch, allegedly saying that he was told upon signing that he would see game time, but that he has been given no explanation from manager Eddie Howe as to why he is not playing. He went on to say, "You can say that's football, but I really have the impression of wasting my time, of being in a dead end." Following the release of this interview, some people started claiming on Twitter that he was misquoted, and the Daily Echo has published a story saying Moussay is set to deny the statements and that the club are giving him their full backing. But I think the test of its authenticity is whether or not we see Moussay in a red and black shirt anytime soon.
AFC B Club News.
Got to say it, Sean. Slightly disappointed there isn't a Christmassy jingle for the club news with like reindeer bells and all that. But hey, you know, I know we've got a limited budget here. Quite interesting, though, to hear about the stadium news. Very interesting to hear what the Cherries Trust chairman, Tony Maycock, had to say as well, who says, "If the statement confirms a lot of rumours that the current owners of the ground are asking too much for what the ground is actually worth, but they're in a position that they want to buy the ground, then that is what they want to sell it for." I don't know the exact figure which they are asking. The board have suggested it's too much. Then that would imply that Structure Dean have put a very high value on it. Now, when I heard the news, Sean, about what Bournemouth were doing, well, in fact, I was actually in Winchester, and I actually got a call from Wave 105 asking me for my opinion on it, and I hadn't even heard about it. I'm like, what? Yeah. And I don't know, to me, it smacks of the club just putting a press release out there and trying to sort of play hardball a little bit. No real plan in motion. I know it says we're working with the council, et cetera, yada, yada. But they're obviously trying to sort of shoot first in the duel. And whether it's going to sort of open some positive dialogue with Structure Dean or not, I don't know. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole thing? And, you know, would you like to see us moving away from Kings Park or staying there or what?
Yeah, part of me wonders, like when we talked about this on the previous show a fair while ago, didn't we? And it was when the club were saying they weren't going to be actively involved in any negotiations. It felt like Structure Dean felt like they were holding all the cards. And, you know, it's like, well, you're not going to move anywhere else. This is your place that you play in, you know, and we had to wrestle back some of the initiatives. So it was like saying, well, we're going to go, because if we leave, Structure Dean are going to be left with a stadium, which currently my understanding is it doesn't have the consent to be residential. So I don't think they can just knock it down and have a developer stick a block of flats up. I think it still has to be used for sporting reasons, of which case that's going to be hard for them to find a tenant to take that over. Unless we can get the old locomotive team to get back together, Sam, and chip in. But you know what I mean? So in that respect, part of me is like, well, is this, like you say, just a chance to say we're going, and then they'll be like, oh, hang on a minute. Or, because the other issue is that this interesting thing about the council. So they're saying the council are also making it tricky. Now, if that's true, then even if we did buy the ground, we can't expand it anymore anyway. So, yeah, there's been lots of things online. I've heard rumours that the lease that we've got on the stadium, if we were to walk away from it, we're still going to have to pay some crazy amount of years worth of rent on it. So, but I guess that probably is a small fry to the purchasing. I've also heard other little birdies saying that the club might already have a space located somewhere, and they've already done a little bit of work structurally to some area of land somewhere in and around Bournemouth ready for a new stadium. So yeah, I think it's going to be one of those wait and sees. In terms of, am I sad to see us go? Yes, it's, I guess, because I've been away for 9 years. I haven't had the last 9 years inside that stadium, albeit fleetingly when I've been back. It's never felt the same as the old Dean Court. And you know, maybe you guys that have still been going regularly, whether it's still the same or not. And this is talking about fans that have been there, you know, like us for the last donkey's years. If it was moving away from the old ground to a new site, I think I'd feel a lot stronger emotionally than I would with our current one, because it's never as home as it is. It's still not the old Dean Court. But from you, Sam, you've still been going pretty regularly in the new stadium. I mean, what's your attachment, especially with what's gone on with the incredible rise? How sad are you going to be if we are to leave?
Yeah, not very. I was working it out the other day. In terms of my AFC Bournemouth supporting life, it was only recently, a few months ago, was the point in my life where I had started, sorry, not started, but I had been supporting Bournemouth for longer in the new stadium than the old stadium, which is weird because, you know, I've had more time at the Vitality Stadium or whatever you want to call it than I have at the old Dean Court, you know, 90 degrees, you know, the other way. And I don't know. I mean, this, I feel, is a transitional stadium that we're at now. And that, I think we probably will end up moving away. And it's a stadium that's served its purpose. it's got us to where we need to be. We certainly couldn't have done anything with that rotting corpse of a stadium that we had before, but I loved it. I loved everything about that old stadium, just all the nooks and crannies. But it served a purpose. But yeah, I mean, we have outgrown it. Obviously, when they, you know, built the stadium in the first place, they were never going to expect that we would be where we're going to be now. But yeah, very interesting to see, you know, what's going on and yeah, how things are going to develop. I do not know. Also, Sean, interestingly, in your news there, Lys Mousset, what's he been saying?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it? And it's, yeah, I don't know whether it's lost, you know, lost in translation, but the report that came out, and it got picked up by the Sun, the Mirror, and some other news organisations, and they were like, hits out at manager and whatnot, and you read it, and he's saying that he played in the cup game and then was told he'd be playing in the league game the next weekend, and he didn't even make the bench, so he was up in the stands, and there's been no explanation. And he says he turned down Spurs, I think, were one of the clubs he turned down to come to us. And he was saying, well, if I wanted to be fourth or fifth striker, I could have done that at Spurs. I don't know. It all sounded pretty out there, surprising, because it's like, if you're going to say that, then basically you're not going to hang around, are you? Eddie's not going to keep you with that kind of stuff. We saw that with Tomlin. So either it is the player has said it and he's just trying to ruffle feathers because January is coming up and he wants to move away, or it's all total nonsense, and as the Daily Echo are saying, he's going to come out and deny it and the club are going to back him. But are we going to see him on the bench? We haven't seen Graben on the bench, have we? And there's some talk that maybe something went on there with Graben. Obviously, Tomlin, once the social media stuff came out, he was gone. Yeah, if we still see him on the bench and we still see him getting minutes, then I will believe it was nonsense. If he suddenly just disappears, as players sometimes do at our club, then yeah, I think he could be out the door.
If I was playing a computer game like, say, you know, Football Manager, I think I would be playing Lys Mousset, and that's a seamless link in to our next part, Sean, where we're going to be giving away a copy of Football Manager 17 in association with Sports Interactive. Now, I used to play it back in the day, and by the sounds of it, so did you.
So I'm 35, right? And when I think back to my childhood, I can't help but think of all those hours I'd spend on the really slow home computer that I had playing the Championship Manager game. Yep, I was one of those guys that would load up as AFC Bournemouth and just spend hours going through all the stats and numbers like an Excel document, just scrutinising all those players and trying to work out the combination of tactics and player transfers that could lead us to the Premier League. What a dream that would be, eh? AFC Bournemouth in the Premier League. But anyway, back then, kids, it really was a dream. And so spending hours on this game just became, well, it was an obsession. Now, if you've never played Championship Manager or what became Football Manager, then yeah, you probably don't really get what I'm talking about. But if you did play the game, then you know what it's all about. After I'd left school and started at work, I'll be honest, there were days where I'd phone up, put the Tito over the phone, I'm too sick today, and then literally spend probably 36 hours with the computer on, just playing, oh, just one more game, go on, just one more week, oh, maybe this time, until invariably there'd be a player mutiny, they'd all lost any belief in me as a manager, and I'd be sacked, apart from one time when I managed to get Bournemouth into the Premier League for one season. Gianfranco Zola was my big signing, scoring loads of goals there after he'd left Chelsea at the end of his career, the twilight years, as I will always remember. I made mistakes like signing Freddie Adu. Remember that guy? He was 15, 16, however old, and he was going to be the next Pelé. Yeah, we've heard that a lot of times since, but Freddie Adu never quite worked out. But anyway, Football Manager is something that's been a love of mine for a long time. It stole my life, as the book that came out said. And as I've grown up, there's been periods where I just haven't been able to load it up and play it because life's busy, right? You have work, kids, responsibilities. And you know, if you turn that game on, that's it. Forget it. You're gone for days, weeks, months, years. But every now and then, I'll dabble in it. And so when Sports Interactive said, hey, back of the net, do you want to have a copy of the game, play it, see what you think, and then give a copy away to your listeners? Well, I looked at it. I thought, I don't know if I can do it, but all right, I will. And so I did, and I love it, and I am now totally back in love once again with Football Manager. And already I can see I've spent far too many hours on it over the last few weeks. So it's a really good game. If you haven't played it for a few years, I've dipped in and out, I'll be honest. So the last one I had, I think, was Football Manager 14, and I played that. And then had to step away. So Football Manager 17. Every year it gets better and better. It gets easier to play. So the whole kind of Excel spreadsheet look of it in the old days, they've kind of tried to pull away from that and make it a lot more accessible and easy to play. If you still want to look at the individual stats and all that, that's all there. But if you just want more of an overview and you just want to get on with the game, you can do that too. The in-game actual matches when they're played, the graphics are way better now. You can kind of see it a lot more instead of the dots, or back in the old day it was just text commentary, and it was like there was only about four different lines for it. Was either goal, miss, hit the post, or, you know, goalkeeper save. But these days there's a lot more to it. I'd really recommend it if you love football and you're kind of interested in coaching. Then yeah, go and grab Football Manager. It's available on PC, it's available on or from Mac as well, as well as there's a handheld touch version you can have. And we now excitedly are going to be giving away a copy of Football Manager 17. That's right, folks. So if you would like to get your hands on one, stay tuned, because coming up in the show in a little while, Sam is going to explain how you can get a copy. I would do it, but I've just got to play one more game. Go on. Shall I sell him? No, I'm going to keep him. Right, another week. Just one more game. Just one more. Just one more.
So thanks to our friends at Sports Interactive. You have a chance through Back of the Net to win a copy of Football Manager 17 for the PC or Mac. And it doesn't matter whereabouts you are in the world. You can be in Outer Mongolia. We'll email you a code and you can download it on your broadband, medical speed connection, or your modem, whatever, and just get it on your computer and then start playing. Now, can you be as good as Vugar Hoodznadze? Do you know who he is? He's the manager of Baku in Azerbaijan that got a job through Football Manager alone. Can you be that good? Interestingly, I'm going to be flying to Dubai next week via Baku, so maybe I can get a bit of a word with him. But anyway, yeah, that's Football Manager 17, and to enter, go to afcbpodcast.com/FM17. That's afcbpodcast.com/FM17. Submit your name, your email address, and where you're from, and just hit the submit button. And that's you with your competition entry locked in. And then stay tuned to future Back of the Nets, as we'll soon be announcing the winner. But do make sure you enter right now. It's afcbpodcast.com/FM17.
Who doesn't love retro?
Oh, that's too much retro, even for me. But we just wanted to remind you of the Back of the Net retro shirt poll. As you may have heard on the podcast, on our website, we're showing off 10 of the best retro Cherry shirts from yesteryear. And at afcbpodcast.com/retro, you can see the shirts and vote for your top three. When the poll has closed, we'll collate the results and we'll then pass over the winners to the club. And who knows, you may well be seeing one or more of the shirts hitting the AFCB Superstore very soon. On our website, you can listen to Sean's interview with Cherry's programme writer Gareth Davis as they discuss all things retro. The shirts are Home 94-95, the red and black stripes, Exchange and Mart Home 92-93, Cooper Beers Home 1986-87, our classical Jermaine Defoe 10 in a row Home 2000-2001, this one reminds me of Jason Brissett Away 96-97, the AC Milan inspired Away 1990-92, that infamous purple away green and horrible colour number 93-94, the Ted McDougall green and black stripes of 97-91, John Bailey at Wembley, the special 1998 shirt, or the Wembley Prelude shirt 97-98. Go on to afcbpodcast.com/retro now and submit your details and vote for your top three. The winners will be sent to the club. And I, for one, cannot wait. Hit the music, please.
Okay, so folks, you just have over the Christmas period to make sure you get your retro shirt votes in. So start of January we will close the votes, and at that point the top three selected will be given to the club, and then fingers crossed we'll see them in the club shop. So do get your votes in now. Tell all your friends, even if they don't listen to the show, they haven't got a podcast app or a radio or ears or whatever, get them to vote, and then we'll close it down in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, good luck with that, and good luck to Bournemouth on Boxing Day, eh, Sean? Oh my goodness, we are going to be away at Chelsea on the 26th of December, and they have won 11 in a row. I won't go through all of their wins because it might take a while. I'm just trying to see who they last lost at. It was actually playing Arsenal at the Emirates, and that was at the end of September, but since then they've put together an incredible run of 11 matches in a row. That's got to be a Premier League record, surely. So they're sitting top of the table on 43 points. Liverpool next on 37. And right down there in 10th at the moment is little old Bournemouth, and we've got 21 points. So Bournemouth are going to be travelling to Chelsea. Now, one of the things that I just mentioned to Sean off air just a minute ago is like, Nathan Ake, is he eligible to play or not? Because when Jack Wilshere was, you know, ineligible to play Arsenal, there was a lot of chat on Twitter about it because a lot of people were talking. And with Nathan Ake, no one's mentioning it.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? And I just went, huh, do you know what? I don't know. And we just had a look on Twitter, and I can't see much rumblings or talking from Bournemouth fans about it. But according to Fantasy Premier League, which is the official fantasy football game, they have Aki down as ineligible for the game. And then I look back at Watford's fixtures against Chelsea last year, and they played them twice in the league, and they also played them in the FA Cup, and Aki was not in the squad for any of those games. So two and two together, I presume we will be running with the fact that Aki will not be playing, which, interestingly, given the whole talk around who's going to play, who's going to be dropped, and there is often this thought that sometimes Eddie is too loyal to his players and whatnot, and then things like this seem to crop up, which kind of take the selection out of his hands. Because if we say, well, if Aki's not playing, then surely that means the whole, who are we going to choose over Francis and Smith? Can he drop the captain? Can he drop Smith, who's been playing well, blah, 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 is taken out of his hands. Because I would imagine the back four would, I'd imagine Daniels will keep his place, and we'd probably be looking at Daniels, Cook, Francis and Smith as a back four. with Aki missing. But yeah, he'll be a big miss at the back, but also up front with the goals he's been getting.
Now, Chelsea team news. Apparently, they got a few players out, but at the moment, it's still a bit too early to say because we are 5 days away. So what's going to happen then with the team? I mean, Callum Wilson, for example, does he retain his starting place?
I would go, and again, we don't know about Sermon. We don't know how far Sermon's away, so yeah, maybe true. We'll see him come back in. But again, if we presume Sermon's still out, personally, I'd go Arta, Gosling and Wilshere. I'd bring Gosling back in, go back to that three. Up the top, I'd actually bring Ibe back in again, give him another rod, go Ibe and King out wide.
Yeah.
And I would go Afobe up top. As much for his ability to hold up the ball. If we're playing Chelsea, we're not going to be expected to see maybe as much of the ball as you would normally have. So I think it would be vitally important to have somebody that can hold the ball up. If you give it to Ibe, in theory, he can hold it up higher up the field, maybe pose a bit of a threat if we can get him one-on-one while we've still got that tight three of Wilshere, Arta and Gosling. Because, yeah, Wilshere and Arta just looked exhausted, didn't they, really, towards the end of the game against Southampton.
Yeah. So when you last played Football Manager as AFC Bournemouth, Sean, how did you do against Chelsea?
Yeah, not great. But on FIFA 17, which I played this morning, Bournemouth versus Chelsea, that was a lot better. That was 1-1. Where Wilshere scored. Ooh. We took an early lead. Wilson had the chance to get a second, didn't take it. Costa had one chance and scored. But Costa is suspended for this game. So he is going to be a big miss for them. I know they've got huge talent can come in, but still, he is, you'd say he's back to his best this season. And so him not being around will help us. Will it be another one of those magical away days? I mean, the form book for us, at least, of win-lose, well, this is... You talked earlier about the start of the show about being a home banker. Surely it's money's on the away team based on that. But I mean, it's going to be tough. But come on, Sam, prediction?
Yeah, I think our streak, sadly, is going to cut. I'd love to be optimistic about this and I'd love to sort of romanticise about an away 1-0 win again. But the strength of Chelsea is just incredible. Hazard on the ball is just magical to watch. The team, Conte's got them playing so well, just fluid movement all over the pitch. I'm gonna have to say they're gonna roll out, and I hate to say this, 3-0 winners.
Well, three is kind of appropriate given our current record. I mean, you look at our last five games, and four out of those five games, we've shipped three goals. And I think the fact that Liverpool was such a compelling victory, and the fact it was Liverpool, and the Leicester, I mean, was a clean sheet and whatnot. But again, the story about them being the champions, it's almost, I think, kind of covered up the fact that we've been conceding loads of goals, you know, and that is a worry. And when you go to one of the big dogs, yes, I think you potentially could be right, Sam. I'll go with my gaming instinct and say a 1-1. But I think either way, it's going to be tough. Enjoy your travels, whoever's going up to the game. And if you're watching it on TV, I hope you have a good bit of turkey sandwich on the side and maybe a large port before the game kicks off, potentially.
Hi, this is Gary Chapman, the bloke who stands in the back of the North Stand shouting, "Up the Cherries!" You're listening to Back of the Net.
Well, as Santa is in his sleigh and will be delivering parcels to children across the globe, Sean and I will be taking a little break from Back of the Net over the festive period. So, unfortunately, we're not going to be here after the Chelsea game. We do have families and we do have lives, and we haven't really got the money or resources to basically do this all the time. Unfortunately, me and Sean would love to, but I'm going to be away. And then Sean's going to be away. So our next podcast is going to be on January the 5th or 6th. That's going to be after the Arsenal game. So we'll have a little summary of the Chelsea match. But then we'll talk a little bit about the Swansea game. And then, of course, it's Arsenal on that Tuesday night. So hopefully you're going to miss us a little bit.
Mm. Oh, and I'll miss you, Sam, because I'm actually going to be away for that first one back. So we're having a week of no show, and then the one after that, it will be Sam with special guest Michael Dunn stepping in admirably to co-host with Sam, and then we will be back to normal from the 11th, which is after the FA Cup game versus Millwall.
Should be an interesting one. So don't forget the retro shirt poll, that's /retro, and the Football Manager competition, which is afcbpodcast.com/FM17. Well, from Sean and I, just we want to say hope you have a great holiday. Hope Father Christmas brings you everything you've wanted. And you've been listening to Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast.
And he scores it! What a day for Callum Wilson! The first hat-trick of his career. Bournemouth lead by 4-2. 6 years ago, they were in the bottom tier, and now surely they have their first ever top-flight win.